I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. We are featuring interviews this month with the Democratic candidates running for mayor of Philadelphia. The Republican candidate, Melissa Murray Bailey, is running unopposed. Our guest today is Senator Anthony Hardy Williams. He was first elected state representative for the 191st District in 1988 when he was 31 years old. 10 years later, he was elected state senator of the 8th District, a job he holds today. He did run for governor of Pennsylvania in 2010. Anthony Hardy Williams joins us on Radio Times to tell us why he wants to be Philadelphia's next mayor. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. I will tell you and the listeners, one of the best things is to walk into a room with you in it. And you're a very humble person.
Don't try to butter me up.
No, I'm not. I want you to ask every tough question, because if you don't, listeners will. But I will tell you, confess that I'm thinking about, like, Cokie Roberts just walked out of the the booth, and you're sitting behind the mic, and I actually have the opportunity to act like I should be in the room. So I just tell you, I'm very impressed.
We call it girl power.
There you go.
Just so you know.
Yes.
So why do you want to be mayor of Philadelphia?
Well, directly, it's because I want to make sure there's an opportunity for a child, regardless of their income and where they live, that they have a great school, public school in their community. And I've worked a lot on that. I also want to make sure that regardless of who you are in society, there's either a job or a business that we either grow or sustain. If you're a member who is reentering society, or if you have a PhD, there's an opportunity for you. Clean and safe neighborhoods, wherever you live in Philadelphia, it should not be a barrier. And for me, I've talked about One Philadelphia consistently, and it's the theme of how you build through consensus the opportunity for all Philadelphians to participate.
Well, I want to pick up on this One Philadelphia theme that you have. I mean, clearly you're saying this is a divided city, if it's a city that doesn't think like One Philadelphia. Divided, I would say, on income lines, racial lines, neighborhood lines, job lines.
We can pick to those areas of where we are not, where we operate in silos. I wouldn't necessarily, it's the contention of what I felt when I was a child, because I grew up in Philadelphia in neighborhoods where sometimes definitely divided over a variety of issues. This is more like benign neglect of each other's existence. So you have the Barnes, you have Rittenhouse Square, you have Washington Square, but you also have 27% poverty. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that doesn't happen by accident. But it doesn't happen in Philadelphia necessarily with malicious intent. It just happens because we haven't been very smart, interactive in terms of how we support and network with one another. And so what I believe is that in this space, in this time, there's an opportunity with an economy and different types of growth in those economies. Certainly in the area of schools, we have the opportunity to get past the tension of a type of school and get to the business of raising money for all schools and making sure they all work effectively. And so, yes, it's hard to do that, but we actually can get there.
Well, let's talk about schools. And you supported the Pennsylvania Charter School Law of 97, the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit Program, your candidacy, even when you ran for governor, and today supported by the Susquehanna Investment Group. These are three wealthy businessmen who live in Ballard-Kinwood. They favor school choice. They favor charters. They favor vouchers. I don't see them necessarily favoring public schools. Are you trying to dismantle the public school system in Philadelphia?
No. And I'm glad you asked me the question. So there's a lot written about it, and frankly, I feel and misunderstood about it. So let's start with them. The only thing they've ever asked me to do is what they believe is a civil right, that all children have an opportunity to have a great education. And in particular, children who are in pretty tough economic communities that don't have good schools. They've never asked me to desert my position on supporting public schools, and I haven't. So since 2010, you can look to the fact that I personally wrote, not just voted for, but I wrote the bills that supported 1% sales tax, a cigarette tax, and a $45 million grant. And so there are people who would question me about those relationships, but they've all gone towards the obvious, and that is philanthropic support for children who are in need. And most importantly, by the way, I'm mirrored by every candidate in this race who says openly they now support charter schools. And in fact, opened two charter schools, supported vouchers, and also at the same time looked for those EITC grant dollars that you're talking about. The one who's endorsed by the teachers union actually has the same credentials that you talk about with regard to me.
But you are a charter school supporter, and you have been a supporter early on of things like vouchers.
I've been a very clear supporter of good schools and if a charter school adds value. But I've also been a part of the record that says if a charter school doesn't work, it should close. People have come to me and said, Tony, support my charter schools. And I look at the value that they don't add, and I have not supported those. I also, frankly, have challenged the status quo, and that is to say, if a charter school should be have improved governance, which I absolutely think it should, and also should have certain controls and measurements on it, I absolutely should, then all public schools should have that. There should not be a school in Philadelphia County that's been in existence for 45 years in a particular section of the city that has not worked well for a long time that should not be challenged. It's just a simple question that all of us should say, do we understand that it's about children, not about systems?
Let me just quote from Jeffrey Yass. He's one of these businessmen from Ballykinwood. He happens to be the director of the Cato Institute. That's a libertarian think tank. He said, rather than throw even more money at the problem, states should institute school choice on a broad scale, moving toward a competitive education market. The only way to transform the system is to break up the longstanding government monopoly and use the dynamics of the market to create innovations, better methods, and new schools. But this idea of bringing the marketplace to education, is that something that you can sign on philosophically?
Marty, we're talking about someone else's quotes on someone else's ideas.
But these are big funders of yours.
And guess what? Other people in this race have big funders too. And hopefully we talk about that.
Sure.
So we've talked for 6 months about three guys in Ballykinwood. We haven't talked 1 minute about one guy in South Philadelphia, John Dockerty, who's supporting Jim Kenney.
Right.
And I hopefully there's going to be balance to the conversation, because the reality is I'm more than comfortable about the fact that nobody's asking me for a pension increase, a job increase, favoritism on jobs. Their belief is what their belief is with regard to public schools and providing an opportunity for children who they think aren't being well served. Mine is my record since 1988, and I'm more than happy to run on my record. 88, I entered the legislature. In 89, Bob Casey asked me to take a tax increase vote as a freshman. I took two. Ed Rendell, in 8 years of prosperity, voted and moved each one of those budgets through, even when I was in leadership, to provide more money for public schools in record numbers. And then since 2010, I'm the author. There's nobody else in this race who's delivered as much money towards public education as me. Nobody. I know people are maybe at home like nodding their head like, I can't believe this. You're right. They can't, because it's not written about. They can't believe the fact that the PFT, yes, came to my office and asked me to make sure that cigarette tax got through, because they did, because I was the one member who could write it and get it through Republican-controlled House and Republican-controlled Senate and signed by a governor. And so in this race, if we're going to have a conversation about public schools, then I'm the person who's done the most with regard to funding public schools as we know it in Philadelphia. The governor this year added a line item, $72 million for charter school reimbursement, so we can stop arguing about traditional public schools versus public charter schools and start talking about how do we make sure all schools work effectively for all children.
You were the head of the board of directors of the Hardy Williams Academy Charter School, named for your father, which did fail to make AYP, was taken over by Mastery Charter. What did you learn, though, about
That's all wrong.
Urban education?
That's all wrong.
I'm looking at the public school notebook.
It didn't get taken over by Mastery, first of all. And it didn't fail AYP. As a matter of fact, it made AYP. And so whoever wrote that, that school made AYP. The reason why we decided to partner with Mastery was because it was average. Not because it was failed. It was renewed. The charter was renewed. And so when people take these statements and they write things like that, I don't know where they say these things. Now, so they say they failed to make AYP. They did not make it. The school did not make AYP every year. But it did make AYP under when I was chairman of the board. Okay. And so that's not true. And it was not taken over by Mastery. The people who were on that board decided to say, look, we can do better than this. We can do better than this. And so we want to partner with someone that we think has a skill set that we respect. We went and found Mastery. They didn't come find us. The school district didn't ask us to do it. Nobody forced us to do it. So I don't know where that was. I never saw that. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I'm holding it in my hand. I mean, it's dated March 11th, 2001, HWACS. Your school failed to make AYP last year with 44.2% of students scoring proficient in reading, 46.2% scoring proficient in math.
And you're also saying, let's balance. You said 1 year. That may be true, that 1 year we did not make it. Let's reflect upon the other years. And I would hope that that should have been a part of the research that was done. AYP that year may not have been made, unlike a number of schools in Philadelphia who don't make AYP. A number of charter schools don't make AYP in a given year. That doesn't make the totality of their existence is never to make AYP. Mm. So I think that we need to be fair about that. I don't know. Again, you read something about 1 year and a takeover, which is absolutely not correct, not factually correct. And so it's unfortunate that that's presented as factual. That's not factual.
Is the goal then, I mean, moving forward, if the idea is to give all children a good education, I think everyone would get behind that. The question is, how do you make that happen? Is it a matter then looking at the good charter schools, the good performing public schools, and trying to figure out, so what is it that are doing, and let's figure out how to make that for all children?
I think the first thing that has to happen is people need to sort of like put their holsters back in their pocket and stop shooting at each other. Pulling out things and say, this doesn't work, that doesn't work. I don't know that that necessarily creates consensus in the conversation. People have to honestly look at the set of circumstances in Philadelphia County, that the majority of students in Philadelphia County will not get the opportunity to decide to go to college. Most will not go to college because we're not presenting a unified system to do that. And so rather than talk about the system, we need to start talking about children and families who are struggling in the system and make them the priorities in this conversation. And so for me, that's what I've done since 1988. I've sent the resources which people have requested. I've sent millions and millions and billions of dollars towards public education. But I've also challenged the fact that parents still send transfer slips to legislators across Philadelphia, including myself, be it a council person, a congressman, or a state representative. They send transfer slips saying, can I get my child into a better school? And so for me, I've taken on the process of saying, let's create other options in public space. Charters may be one, but Penn Alexander, which has a tremendous public school model in West Philadelphia High, West Philadelphia, uses a university to support it. I've adopted those models, which I think deliver quality education to children regardless of where they live, regardless of their income. Both have worked effectively.
But do you think, and we're almost up in a break here, mm-hmm. but do you think then the school system needs even more money? The superintendent says he needs an additional $103 million in order to sort of go back to way things were a couple of years ago before he was laying off teachers and school counselors and nurses and people like that.
Yeah, so I've openly supported first of all, those of us who are running for mayor need to stop acting like we're running for superintendent. Okay, that's the first thing. We're not. A mayor raises money. That's what I do. I've done that effectively. The second thing is we need to create continuity. We have all these ideas that we keep talking about and all this kind of stuff we're arguing. The bottom line is, mayor, I will find money for public education and I will support Dr. Hike. We've had 3 or 4 different superintendents in the last 13 years, which is called chaos. I support Dr. Height. I support his plan, and that means we have to find revenue to support his plan. I'll do all three.
Mm. And the idea, I mean, choice is giving parents the choice to send their children to the school that they want for them. And as we know, there's a waiting list for charter schools. Does the city need more?
I think the school district needs more good schools. Now, charters are not a panacea, and I want people to understand that. I don't think that it's one type of school. Masterman, Central, Mastery, Penn Alexander. Special admissions, magnets, neighborhood, and charter schools. As long as they provide, they're safe for student and teacher, as long as they provide a quality education, then I will support them moving forward. And they need more good seats in Philadelphia, whatever the type and design is.
Let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Senator Anthony Hardy Williams. He is running for mayor of Philadelphia, one of the 6 Democratic candidates running for mayor. And the primary is on the 19th of May. We are doing sit-downs with all of them. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Pennsylvania Senator Anthony Hardy Williams. He is running for mayor of Philadelphia, the nation's 5th largest city, and the Pennsylvania primary less than a month away. This is one of a series of interviews that we are doing with the Democratic candidates running for mayor of the city. And again, the lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. There was a forum at WHYY earlier this morning. You participated in that. And the issue of the sale of PGW came up. This sale did not go forward because the president of city council basically didn't want to have a hearing on it. But nonetheless, it still sort of hangs out there. What should be done with PGW?
Well, actually, I brought it up. So the question was, you know, what would you want to do as your salient moment and what would you do immediately? And I said I would return to the conversation about how we re-energize the opportunity to either lease, create an authority around PGW, because I think that of anything that we can talk about for our economy is most relevant. And so for me, I basically said I would get to the table, have a conversation with council, see what works for them, because I the closing commentary wasn't that we wouldn't be open to it.
Right.
It was they weren't open to what was proposed to them. The reason for that was very simple. I laid it out why. For all the things we can talk about our economy, if we play this space correctly, it creates an opportunity for those who are certainly educated and maybe an architect, a designer, a lawyer, a PhD, an entrepreneur, but it also opens up the opportunity for somebody who's reentering society, somebody who is not skilled in labor, and somebody who may be a high school dropout also has an opportunity if we do this effectively in terms of using that asset to move things forward. And finally, the significant amount of money that we get with regard to that creation would be a huge impact upon the pension for Philadelphia. That would allow us to send more money towards public schools without raising taxes in Philadelphia, and also allow us to do what we don't talk about as mayor, fill potholes.
Oh, fill potholes.
That would be helpful.
People would be
they'd
very
like
much appreciative of filling potholes.
Yes.
But going back to this, and one of the criticisms when we had the president of city council on the show seemed like it was a relationship problem with the mayor. And how much do you think – how important do you think that is, the relationship between the mayor of Philadelphia and city council?
It's always important. They're a legislative body that makes sure that the – I mean, it's the design of government. A democracy which doesn't allow for a king to be in order. So all chief executives are checked by the legislative branch as is supposed to occur. And in my case, I'd be no different. And so – it was important for me when I announced to have four or five council members openly support me. It was important for me to have worked with Darrell Clark on the 1% sales tax increase, which he was not happy with initially because that was supposed to go towards solving the pension problem. I will say to his credit, he compromised and allowed us to use for some period of time supporting public schools. And so I have a history of already working with council to recognize they actually have a voice in this conversation as we move forward to solve tough problems in Philadelphia.
What have you learned in Harrisburg that you could bring to Philadelphia?
Well, one, I've learned consensus building. So I've been in the minority a long time, unfortunately. So I work with
Republicans. This is Pennsylvania,
this
after
is Pennsylvania,
all, not
right.
Philadelphia,
not
right?
Philadelphia. And by the way, whoever's going to be the mayor has to have that skill set to not just talk about working with Harrisburg, but has actually done it. And I'm uniquely positioned, and I have a body of work to show that I brought back a certain amount of resources to Philadelphia that have had an impact upon the quality of life. And so Republican Senate, Republican House, as it's currently constructed, probably will be that way under the next administration or mayor. I've worked with those leaders, and so they know me effectively. And I not only delivered on education, but on economic issues in Philadelphia.
What about the problem of, as you mentioned, safety and safe streets, but the problem of crime in Philadelphia? Now, it wasn't the way it was a generation ago, but nonetheless, there are sections of the city where crime is a daily occurrence. People hear gunfire at night. How do you suggest addressing that, knowing that there is this tension at times between police and the people that they serve?
I'm very appreciative that you brought that up. So the mayor has actually personally challenged me to say, Tony, crime, violent crime is lower in Philadelphia than it's ever been in history or a long time in Philadelphia. We're down to 200 homicides in Philadelphia. And his view is that that's good news, but whoever's running for mayor should be talking about 199, 190, moving it down significantly. And so my body of work is around, most recently as a candidate, to talk about the 91 points, I think it is, that the president has rolled out. He and the commissioner of Philadelphia rolled out a plan. I early on endorsed it as a candidate running, and the rest did not. And I carved out the space in which technology would be used for the community and police officers. Obviously, a camera on a police officer is important, but a camera in a hot spot so a police officer knows what they're moving into is very important. A much more diverse police department is very significant. But finally, most importantly, hate speech needs to be removed from any portion of an ability. And that means the events that we've all seen, and one in particular in South Carolina, where one human being shot another human being 8 times in the back, meant that that person didn't see that person as a human being. Hmm. And so my position has been very simple. When we negotiate the next contract with the FOP, that if you're discovered to be a homophobic, sexist, or racist, if it comes out of your mouth, we find it to be the case, you should get fired.
If it's, say, posted on your Facebook page, something like
that? Posted on your Facebook page. I don't care where it is. I don't care if you're at a party. If it comes out that you're part of it, you should get fired. And the FOP should agree that you cannot come back. There should not be arbitration. The reason for that is you can do anything else in life, basically, and harbor some limitations on another human being. But once you're a police officer and you have the right to have a gun strapped to your hip and a shield attached to your chest, and you have those feelings and you say you're going to police me, that puts us in a, frankly, in opposition to the truth. And so for me, it is very basic that we should have zero tolerance of hate speech by our police department. And I will say this, unfortunately. The head of the FOP said that he didn't agree with that, that he thought that a decent amount of police officers would no longer be police officers in Philadelphia. I thought that was kind of shocking.
What does that tell you?
Well, that was scary, to be very candid with you. That's my point. And so I think that anyone who's going to be the mayor should be able to say that is the policy that we're going to adopt for police officers.
I understand exactly where you're coming from, but I also wonder whether you would be up against the ACLU. I mean, we do have free speech in this country.
People are able
to say heinous and horrible things.
They are. And so I would suggest to you that I think it's San Diego or San Francisco, where they actually have a similar policy that is actually applied. And so for those who say it can't be done, it has been done already. That's how they were able to get rid of those police officers in another part of the country. Philadelphia should be a leader in this, not a follower in this conversation. And we should not be slow to figure out all the obstacles to change, but there should be an immediate change.
That's Anthony Hardy Williams, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, running for mayor of Philadelphia. I'm repeating myself, but it's important to know that the Pennsylvania primary is less than a month away. It is May 19th, and yes, people get to vote in Philadelphia. They also get to vote across the state. For those people who don't live in Philadelphia, you get to vote as well. And we are hosting the mayoral candidates, the Democratic candidates running for mayor of Philadelphia, believing that it's important for people living in the city and also in the region as well. Part of WHYY's extensive election coverage, and you can check it out at the Newsworks blog called 99. You can also join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get, looks like Brian from Fairmount to join us. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm executive director of Heeding God's Call, a gun violence prevention organization. And I know Senator Williams has done a lot of great things, but I'm really curious how he would answer that while he was state senator, he voted twice for so-called stand your ground legislation, which I think we can all recognize is more likely to result in even further gun violence in a city that's swamped by it.
Brian, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. This was to vote to expand the Castle Doctrine,
correct,
as it's called.
Which is decidedly different, even though my friends would like to exaggerate to suggest it's stand your ground, which is decidedly different. Anybody who knows it understands what it is. The Castle Doctrine in Pennsylvania has basically said that if somebody intrudes your home, you have a right to protect it. We expanded it to your personal property, a car. Carjackings were occurring across Philadelphia. We found people, seniors included, who were put in the untenable position of defending themselves if somebody was attacking the car. It's that simple. There's no closely related to stand your ground. And I understand that people want to sort of imply it's closely. It's not. It's very narrowly constructed. The Castle Doctrine in Pennsylvania is one that people of all reasonable minds understand. You want to take somebody who's protecting themselves and in some of those neighbors you talk about who are being affected. But further, I would also suggest this to the gentleman. I've been honored by those who have said to me, I'm the only one who created a illegal gun task force. It's longstanding for about 10 years now, which supplied millions of dollars to undercover agents in Philadelphia County, police department agents, not FBI, not federal government, police department folks in Philadelphia, so they can go after those illegal guns in Philadelphia. So I have a distinguished record when it comes to fighting guns and illegal guns in Philadelphia County.
You don't mind senior citizens packing a gun?
No, if they can shoot. I mean, and I will tell you that for me, I don't own a gun. Some people have. I don't own a gun, never had a permit to own a gun. That's not my choice. But for those who believe that they have to defend their home or their business and they go through all the necessary things to do that, they're legal gun owners as opposed to illegal gun owners. I'm opposed to illegal gun owners who are straw purchasers or going across Philadelphia. That's where you see the level of violence which is occurring in these neighborhoods across Philadelphia with illegal guns.
My understanding for the Castle Doctrine in Pennsylvania is that gun owners had the right to shoot if they felt that they were under threat no matter where they were.
No. The amendment to the Castle Doctrine is very specific in nature. Okay, it relates to the castle, your property.
So your car, your property, your
exactly,
home.
Exactly. Precisely. So that, hence Castle, what? Not stand up and shoot.
Was this supported by the NRA?
I don't know, because I have a pretty miserable record with the NRA. So I have a, if this was, I don't have a clue. They didn't call me up and say, let's honor Tony Williams.
Let me see what Angela from Point Breeze has to say. Angela, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been living in Point Breeze for around 10 years, and we have the most awful issue with trash. And it just seems like really bad environmental racism right now, where anything north of Washington's pretty clean and taken care of, but anything south, and actually, after our trash has been collected, it's even worse down there. And I want to know what this candidate would do about it, because Mayor Nasser came in with all these promises. We all turned out to clean the city, and he arrived 4 hours late and left 2 hours early. So, like, I want to know what we can do that's not volunteerism. I think that we deserve a better quality of life in our city.
Angela, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Nothing more basic than trash.
She asked my one question. She asked my question.
Go ahead.
I'm the only one who's proposed a $5 increase on your vehicle registration. That would go toward reconstituting the streets department. We have decimated the streets department. It's less than half of what it was. We're going to return it back to so we have manpower. We're going to clean your streets at least once a week in Philadelphia. And we're going to support those who are short. We're going to have technology and cameras and short dumping spaces. But fundamentally, the way that they did it in Baltimore was allow for street sweeping to return on a consistent basis to that city. We're going to do the same thing in Philadelphia.
I mean, sort of like the Center City District in a way, but just expanded to to the rest of the city.
So, and that's the point. The rest of the city can't afford what they did in Center City. That's why we didn't do it across the city in Philadelphia. That's why this $5 increase in your vehicle, this small portion, you will actually see a direct result. In addition to cleaning streets, that will also allow some of the revenue to support repairing the streets. And so those potholes which we're driving through will also be repaired, as well as the streets that we repair will be clean at the same time.
We have a tweet from Claudia wanting to know your opinion on pilots and Penn's responsibility to Philadelphia.
So
this gets a little bit into the weeds, but this is important stuff.
No, it's important. And people important are pretty passionate about Penn and Drexel and Temple doing more. And I've had conversations with the mayor about this. The truth is, for all of us who are talking about it, there's not a mayor who has a all of us will say we want them to do more, and we'll do pilots. Ray, rah, rah, include me in that conversation.
It's programs in lieu of taxes.
Exactly.
Right?
But the truth is, we don't have a way to do it directly. Now, what we do have a way to do is when they have needs, and that's zoning, et cetera. What are we going to get directly back for that? And in some cases, you have a police department, which is expanded. Some of it is cleaning around the University of Pennsylvania. Certainly, some of it is access to those programs which occur after schools. And so while I can sit here and tell you that I, along with everybody else, will say we're supportive of it, the question is, how do you execute? And I don't have a very clean, effective answer to that.
Can I ask you another question? This has to do with Philadelphia and its gun laws. And as we know, in this city, it's really the legislature, the state, that has to sign off on Philadelphia's unique, I guess, gun problems or crime problems and its gun laws. Should Philadelphia have more autonomy when it comes to its gun laws?
Yes. We have had that direct conversation in Harrisburg. Unfortunately, the NRA came to Harrisburg and passed a law, which I, in my opinion, feel it's unconstitutional.
It's being challenged.
It is. Yes. And I'm very supportive of that and have been supportive of that, myself and Senator Dillon Leach, where they basically say somebody who's not even from Pennsylvania has a right to sue us in our own county. And by the way, put punitive financial damages against the county. So, I mean, I'm very much opposed to that. I believe that working with those who are suing the NRA and others who are involved in this to push back and allow us to protect ourselves. I mean, it's very I don't know what it is. It is odd to find Republicans who believe that government shouldn't be involved in details are now pushing this down our throat.
Let me see what Raphael from Germantown has to say. Raphael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. I was calling in to ask if your guest was willing to reinstate the $200, which Governor Corbett cut off from public assistance recipients, and whether he was in favor of that and whether he would lobby Governor Wolf to reinstate that cash.
And Raphael, I think you called in last week and asking the same questions, and it's a good question. Go ahead.
The good news is this, that the governor is reconstituting that. He's, matter of fact, the asset program in terms of food stamps and credit, he's reversing all those trends that we've seen for some time. So I wish I could take credit and say, because I'm there, I did it. But the truth is, Tom Wolf, I think, is going to be a great governor. I think he started out effectively addressing the issues of need for all Pennsylvanians.
How much do you think – it's interesting you mentioned Tom Wolf because he is a businessman. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. The question is, you know, can you bring business practices to government to make it work?
That drives me crazy.
Why?
Because people – I was a business guy. worked for a large corporation, and I had my own small company. Government and business are two different animals, totally different. Efficiencies are important. So data is important. So if you're going to fund a program in government, you should have data that supports it and not keep funding if it doesn't work. Efficiencies in terms of how you drive it out. But understand, government is designed – business is designed to make profit. That's what it's designed to do in America, okay? And if you don't make profit, you don't stay in business. And so therefore, efficiencies when it comes to business sometimes mean laying off people just because of money, not because it's the right thing to do, not because of anything. The boards in America are all designed around your fiduciary responsibility to the corporation. If you don't make money, you get fired. So while there are practices of using technology or using people a certain way, all that are things we can learn from. But government is designed to have laws, regulations, protect people, to be compassionate, to do it effectively and not gouge your pocket with taxes to do it. But it's designed to make sure that corporations, religious organizations, nonprofits don't run amok over people doing whatever they do. And so while people want to draw that analogy and it makes it sound sexy and cute, the truth is they're two different entities. I know them well, both, because I've done them both.
And, I mean, do you think of the Philadelphia residents as customers? I mean, that is one.
Now, that is a great – yeah. L&I is proof perfect that we don't treat people as customers. And so I am a person who's been a small business owner who's very frustrated when I go stand in a line for 500 hours and they have to wait. And on a serious note, understand this. A significant portion of small business in Philadelphia are people who can't afford to take off a day. Not a day. They cut hair. They do things. So for me, that's where we have to be smarter. We should be using software in places that makes the person on the other side of the counter more well-trained. People arrive. We have a significant immigrant population that do not speak English well. Why would we not use – and I'll answer that on the other side.
Very good. That's Senator Anthony Hardy Williams, senator here in the state of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and he is one of six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with Senator Anthony Hardy Williams. Just a quick recap here. First elected to the legislature as a representative for the 191st district. This was back in 1988. He was 31 years old. A decade later, elected state senator of the 8th district. That's a job he holds today. He did run for governor in 2010, and he is one of six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. I see lots of emails here, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We were talking about L&I and customers.
Right. So get to the bottom line. We're going to use technology to streamline it, consolidate, so you don't have to go to four different departments when you're running around City Hall. Allow for the customer experience, the interaction between that person's working on the other side of the counter to be as effective as it possibly can. So that when it happens, you have an appointment as opposed to a destination moment that makes us feel much more productive.
But how can a mayor sort of, snap his or her fingers
question.
And make
so
that happen?
That's where you have – people talk a lot about the managing director. Strong managing director, great. Smart managing director who's techie savvy is the most important thing. That will allow the redesigning of the silos of government to be moved away by technology so we can interact with each other's information more productively, allow for that social entrepreneurial spirit which is out there, sharing our data, coming back and forth. Our managing director has to be housed in that area to redesign it.
Who would be that person?
I can't tell you that.
Have you thought about that?
Yes.
Sounds like
a good, smart, technologically savvy person.
We have a tweet from Marge saying, no. Why should vehicle registration fees be raised in order to pick up trash? People need to clean up after themselves. Well, that is true.
That's true. And I wish. And by the way, if I got on the radio and said, all things will be perfect and we can fund schools without making tough choices, we can clean up streets without making decisions, I'd probably be running for president. But the truth is I'm only running for mayor, and I can only tell you the truth. That's part of the reason why we have to do it.
You have the support of a number of groups, the Black Clergy, the Carpenters Union as well. Do you think they should be let back in the convention center?
So that's not my decision. This is
not my lane.
It's not my space, and I'm not investing in time. By the way, I'm supported by the laborers who are inside the convention center who have a different perspective about the Carpenters.
Yes, they do.
So I have a balanced perspective, as I do in very varying different relationships with a variety of people. Those folks who are heading the convention center, I think, will make their decision that they already made well before I showed up in a mayoral campaign supporting me running for mayor, not head of the convention center.
The Carpenters want to boycott the Democratic National Convention. Now, that's more than a year away. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
Well, we don't want to encourage anybody boycotting, do we? I mean, we want to put on our best face. And so let me become mayor, and I can figure out how to make sure nobody's going to be boycotting at that time and space. And it doesn't. And by the way, understand something. If people think that the only entities that may boycott would be the Democratic National Convention, understand, we sit in a city right now. You mentioned it earlier. Issues of safety will be front and center when it comes to the Democratic National Convention. People are going to be asking people, which side do you sit on? You're going to have somebody who says, no, it's about building consensus. Folks will be standing out there talking about all lives matter. They will be there. And so how do we make sure they're inside the building? What message we provide to them that inspire trust and belief that we're moving in a space and time, partly inspired out of what the president did, but also born out of what I said, and that is hate speech will not be tolerated in the police department, and build trust. We have issues that will arrive at that Democratic National Convention amongst Democrats, which currently divide us and may put us outside the building or inside the building.
Let me see what looks like Carly from calling us from Reading, Pennsylvania. Carly, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
So my question for the senator there is, if you were to become mayor, I'm a registered nurse. I work in one of the community hospitals in the city, and we as nurses have seen a lot of change in healthcare since the Affordable Care Act has been implemented, and we're noticing a lot of push for healthcare to be home-driven and the focus is being changed to patient-centered care. Health and wellness is the focus and the push for medical professionals. And what is the plan to try to educate communities, the population? We talked about, you know, a lot of immigrant populations. We have a diverse and wonderful.
You know what, Carly? I'm going to jump in here only because it's not the greatest phone line. We're missing some of your words. You know, I'll just read what I see on the computer. Works in Philadelphia as a nurse. Wants what sort of plans does he, meaning you, have to improve the health and wellness of the city?
So we're going to start early in life. So part of what actually happens, and part of what happens in life should be a better design of from infancy through the period when you pass, that we involve ourselves in healthcare and regardless of where you are in the city of Philadelphia. So from infancy to three, we should be testing much more about autism and intellectual disabilities. We're not. We're going to use certainly clinics, hospitals, and a variety of professionals to make sure that we understand where a child sits in our society, specifically in Philadelphia County. We're also going to obviously use those intellectual disabilities to make sure that they don't enter school as a special needs child, but actually serve them where they are. We're going to provide, because of Medicaid expansion, a much more credible opportunity for 100,000 people who are not currently getting insurance and don't have insurance to be involved. And we're going to expand certainly beyond that through the department, efficiencies through technology, and providing space in places where we can have more people who are healthcare providers in homes and communities where they currently don't deliver.
Don't you need a lot of money to do that? I mean, in order to connect people with the services that they need?
You do need resources, but we need a redesign of how it works. I will say proudly enough that Estelle Richmond has helped me craft some of this information about how we deliver more effectively in Philadelphia. Now, I'm not claiming that she's the supporter. I'm just telling you that she actually has helped me support understanding this very complicated area. Obviously, those areas which have modest incomes or low incomes are tragically underserved and don't understand and are not necessarily as educated as they necessarily need to be. And that network of faith-based, of community organizations, of the YMCA are the delivery systems of making sure people need to know how to protect their children early in life, and that's a heavy emphasis under this administration. And it doesn't require necessarily a huge amount of money. It needs a better alignment, though.
Carly, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Is it possible to have Philadelphia be the green city that Michael Nutter has worked to create in Philadelphia and also to have an energy hub?
Oh, yes.
You can have both?
Yes. We have natural gas in Philadelphia today, correct?
Yes, we do.
Flowing underneath us.
Yes, we do.
We're not fracking in Philadelphia.
No, but the fracking fracking contents, if I can put it, or gas from fracking is coming to Philadelphia.
It's natural gas.
Right.
And so hopefully it does come to Philadelphia because we're paying a premium as we currently – we should understand this. You ship gas to Philadelphia and then it goes to Texas and it comes back to Philadelphia. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
Seniors who are on fixed income are paying a premium for that process. That's not right. We should be about the efficiencies of how we make sure that everyone is represented in this opportunity. So let me be very clear for the record. I have 100% conservation voters record. I have a 90% Sierra Club record. I know how to make sure we protect the environment, not sacrifice it for it to be an energy hub. And certainly in terms of my development, in terms of supporting development in Philadelphia, that means cleaning our streets. That means using sustainable energy. That means using sustainable businesses. And all those areas that we talk about are a part of not just what I say as running for mayor, but as a part of me as a legislator. So this false premise that you have to have one versus the other is a false premise. The question for those of us who are involved in social entrepreneurism, understand you can reconcile those differences and make sure you protect the environment and grow businesses at the same time.
There are, though, fallouts from fracking, from drilling for natural gas. Methane leaks, for one. They're talking about earthquakes in Oklahoma. I mean, it's not risk-free.
No, there's no risk-free of any. I mean, oil, solar, wind, gas, electricity, all have consequences to the environment. All have consequences to the environment. And well-documented, too, by the way. The question is, does the federal government recognize those risks and do they protect us? Does the state government recognize those risks? Do they protect us? Does local government recognize those risks and do they protect us? In all three cases, when it comes to all three of those or all of those categories, they have done studies on each one of those categories and allow an industry to grow at a certain rate based upon scientific evidence and information. There's certainly a lot of anecdotal commentary as I hear regarding this space, but fracking has been a part of this. Part of the environmental development for 60 plus odd years. And so while I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it is perfect, that nothing can ever happen, of course it can. The question is, how do I protect Philadelphians as mayor? How do I allow for our energy hub to come here and make sure the environment is protected at the same time? And actually have a plan that is real and real specific that does that.
Do you see the energy hub as a job creator then?
No, absolutely. It is a job creator. That's why I mentioned PGW earlier. I mean, for those who understand it, we have to replace 88 old gas lines underneath Philadelphia. The plan to repair them is 88 years. And you and I have seen places blow up in Philadelphia, unfortunately, because of gas main leaks. So we should be about the business of replacing that pipeline safely and effectively. If we do that, it not only provides for PGW to get online, it provides for exporting natural gas. Port comes back to life, allows for people to be safer with reduced costs. But most importantly, that pipeline of people who are not here in Philadelphia allows for architects, entrepreneurs, designers, lawyers, those who are returning to society, dropouts, all become a part of a workforce that for the first time reconstitutes. We haven't seen this since manufacturing was king in Philadelphia, and we don't have enough people. That dividing line of City Line Avenue goes away because we don't have enough people to fill this pipeline.
Let me get some more callers in. Looks like we have Katie from Mount Airy joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Katie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks
there.
For taking my call.
Sure.
I am following Ed Rendell's advice to those who want stronger gun laws to become one-issue voters. So I'm very focused on your gun policy. And thank you for your comment about the problem of illegal guns and the violence that they are creating. I'm wondering if you would take the next step and enhance regulation of gun shops where the straw purchases are actually taking place.
Well, I appreciate
thank you for that question.
Go ahead,
so
Kate.
That's exactly what the task force was intended to do and is intended to do. That we are funding, and we haven't funded at the level that I want to be funded at, $5 million at one time at the height. But we have actually allowed for police, local police, to be undercover agents to go into those places to track straw purchases. It worked for a period of time until we started cutting in the budget under Corbett the amount of money that we supported. As mayor, I will make a local commitment as well as a state commitment to bolster the ability to go after straw purchases across Philadelphia. Because I think what you just said is the way – it is unfortunately the limited way we actually can attack guns in Philadelphia through illegal purchases and straw purchases in Philadelphia.
Thanks for the call. We have a tweet from Esso saying, what is your stance on the raise on the race to raise property taxes seemingly arbitrary right now? That's from his perspective from Esso.
Yeah, so I can't suggest to you that I'm a fan of the mayor's proposal to raise property taxes, so I'm not, because I'm not sure we can actually afford it in this current space and time in which people live. There is a reality to him fixing the process by which people were taxed. Under the previous process, it was broken across Philadelphia, and people admitted it. There were special interests, people doing favors, a lot of things that make people like me very nervous that now has changed. And the consequence of that change is that certain places which were underassessed are now assessed appropriately. Those that were overassessed are now reduced. And so I recognize, including myself, who has to explain to my wife why my why my property tax went up. I have to explain to her it's because we have fixed the current system. And so I think that we should not move away from that. I think we need to improve it so that people don't have these raises and increases in their property taxes, which they didn't expect, without information or, frankly, without a real assessment that's done correctly.
An email from Daryl saying, my main concern with Mr. Williams is his lack of executive experience. As a legislator, he was or is better than most. However, to address my concern, what type of people would he hire in his administration to head departments? And he says, give us some names.
So, let me give you the most. First of all, I have had executive experience. I've worked for a large corporation, PepsiCo. Don't hold it against me because it is soda. But that said, let me answer this first. So I've been a mid-level executive at PepsiCo, and I've had my own budget. I have had my own people. I've had to direct them. So I've had executive experience. I've had my own company, small company nonetheless, but I've had my own company. So I have had executive experience managing millions of dollars, not a little bit of money, as compared to other people running. So I've actually had that. And there are department heads, and there are people specifically with the police department, DHS, managing director, the three areas that I've actually, have people identified that would fit those, I guess, resumes that I have laid out. But I think it's unfair for them and me to sort of put them on the spot.
Okay. Thanks for the email. Looking at the clock here, you know, if the past is any guide for this year's primary, maybe 20, maybe 30% of registered voters are going to go to the polls to vote. Why are people so disconnected from politics?
Because they don't see a direct relationship between what we say and what we do. And I think that's part of it. Our records, people will say, I'm running on my record. Then they run away from their record, as some people are. I'm not. So change is a part of this conversation. And it's hard for people to deal with that. And in my case, we talk a lot about schools. I'm proud to see that we're moving forward past the type of school towards funding all schools and making all schools work. I'm proud to say that during the course of this race, I forced people to take tough positions when it comes to policing and police and hate speech. I'm proud to say I actually know how to build consensus. And so people need to understand that what I'm saying, I've done, and that people will the street cleaning conversation which we actually had, they want to see that there's a real value to the taxes that they're paying, and I've done that through my entire legislative career.
Well, on that note, we have to say goodbye to you, and thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. The clock tells me we are out of time. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And that's Senator Anthony Hardy Williams running for mayor of Philadelphia. Last week, our guests were Lynn Abraham and Doug Oliver. Tomorrow, I'll be talking with Nelson Diaz. On Wednesday, I'll be talking with Milton Streep. And on Thursday, I'll be talking with Jim Kenney. Those are the six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to sign up for our newsletter, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, and the show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.